Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
If you're with me, then let's leave. 1.5 UMFM, this is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Alves, and kicking things off for us tonight, a new single from Stars. It's called Are You With Me? And I hope you're with me, tuned in for the next hour and a half. Stars are going to be in town December 1st alongside Dizzy. Really recommend checking out the opener as well as Stars, who are fantastic live. I've seen them probably a half dozen times at this point. Speaking of seeing things live, Ticket Monsters, go to the gig segment coming up in just a few minutes. And then later on, we're going to have an interview with Toronto jazz drummer Ethan Ardelli, who's going to be on campus and at 4th next Tuesday. And then a session I recorded this afternoon with Alexi Campin, who is opening for Heather Bishop and who dropped by and did some songs. So we're going to get that in a moment. But first, a new cover of Transformer Man, the Neil Young classic by Trent Moeller. I'm playing this one because I want to give you the heads up that UMFM is spearheading International Neil Young Day, November 10th. And so next week I'm going to do some more Neil Young programming. But November 10th itself, lots of stuff happening, including Neil Fest down at the Times Change High and Lonesome Club. Stick around. This is Trent Moeller with Transformer Man.
Remote control. Cricket Monster. I've got four shows to recommend for next week. Three are on the same day, and then another one is on... Actually, they're playing for 2 days. Let me start with the ladies. These shows are on Tuesday, November the 6th. The first one is Sue Foley. If you like blues guitar, I heard she's really fantastic. I haven't seen her, but I heard she's really great. And she's at Times Change High and Lonesome Club. Tickets are at ticketfly.com. I've always wanted to see Sue. The second lady is on November 6th. That's also the Tuesday. It's Tash Sultana at the Burton Cummings Theatre. Tickets at ticketmaster.ca. I've never seen Tash, and I was really excited to see her. And originally, I did have tickets to see her. However, the next artist that's playing on Tuesday, November 6th, is Jack White. And my husband went ballistic when he heard that announcement, and so now we're going to Jack White. So, he's playing at Bell MTS Place. Tickets at ticketmaster.ca on November 6th. That's the Tuesday. The interesting thing about Jack White is that he's not a fan of cell phones at concerts, which should be really cool. So what happens is you take your cell phone to the concert because it's a paperless ticket event. You have to show them your ticket on your cell phone, and then they lock the cell phone somehow, and then you experience the show, and then as you're leaving, they unlock your cell phone. It should be really cool. But as a story writer, a concert story writer, it's a bit difficult for me because usually I'll be taking notes and then I'll take these really awful pixelated pictures with my camera so that people can see what I'm experiencing. And I can't do that this time. Apparently Jack White has his own photography team, and so they'll be taking pictures and then posting them, and I can repost those if I'd like. Or I put it out on my Facebook page, Ticket Monster. I put it out there. I said, listen, do you want to see Jack White's photographer's pictures, or would you like to see me draw stick men of the show? And surprisingly, like 80% of people who follow me on Facebook at Ticket Monster wanted to see my really horrible stick men drawings. So, if you'd like to see them too, check out my page on either Wednesday or Thursday, and you'll see the story, which will hopefully be good, and then just really awful stickman drawing, and I apologize in advance. The next show is The Headstones at Club Regent Event Center. The tickets are at ticketmaster.ca, and they're playing on November 8th and 9th. They're there to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Picture of Health album, which makes me so depressed. My God, I remember when that album came out, and it's now 25 years later, and, well, it was still a great album, and I'd love to see it performed live, so we'll see what happens. Let's play a couple of tunes here. Let's go with my husband's favorite Jack White tune is Highball Stepper, so we'll start with that one, and then let's do a Headstone song. I loved When Something Stands for Nothing, so let's do that. As always, you can check out the stories that I'm writing on my Facebook page at Ticket Monster, and have a great week. It's going to be a good one. Bye.
Oh, something stands for nothing. A detached memory. This one's about everything you don't think about until you sleep. Yeah. And this one's for nothing. And this one's for fun. And this one's about rock and roll and comic books and bubble gum. Something, yeah, but none of it'll last unless you take the reins, take them from the night, push the pawn right through the past. And this one's for the silence and the questions that it brings, and the smell of time and the reverence and the possibilities.
Try. to stay by my side. You got to get that I got flaws. Feel free to leave anytime. Lord knows I will give you cause. Yeah, you get to choose. Now you know the truth. The truth is I'm a total disaster.
All right, well, coming to Winnipeg November 6th, appearing at 4th in the evening at 7:30 p.m., but here on campus at the University of Manitoba, 4 p.m. in the afternoon, Ethan Ardelli, who has just released The Island of Form, joins us on the line. How are you doing, Ethan?
Oh, I'm doing great, Michael. Yourself?
I'm doing very good. So
nice.
I know that on this current tour, you're hitting some universities and other places and not just venues.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is that like, you know, kind of a pay-it-back thing for a jazz student to do, or is it, you know, something you wanted to do that you hadn't done in the past, or, like, what's kind of the mindset behind that?
Well, there's a few things involved, for sure, definitely. I think it's important for people at least for me, anyway, it was definitely important to kind of give back and share some information with people. I know in the past, going to different clinics and stuff like that has helped me out. So if there's any way I can help students out, that's definitely part of the deal for me. But also too, it's just kind of organizing different places to play and different opportunities. So it just ends up being also too that some of the schools they're up for having us. So so sort of win-win situation, really.
Right. Now, in terms of doing those kind of like workshops and sort of educational opportunities, has anything come out of that in terms of like creatively for you? Like, has any sort of question from a student or
oh yeah
know,
yeah
Yeah.
Totally. Well, I would say just in general, teaching for me, it's not something that every musician loves to do, but personally myself, I've always really enjoyed it. With the right student, obviously, you know, if someone's into it as much as I'm into it, then it's definitely not work whatsoever. And I think for me, teaching has really helped clarify my thought process, because before I started teaching, I just kind of did my stuff and I didn't really overanalyze what I was doing.
Right.
And but then once, for instance, one good example was when I first started teaching jazz. Someone, a student said, "Well, how do you play the ride cymbal beat for jazz?" And I was like, "Oh, it just goes ding, 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 and then you listen to music and you make it sound good, you know." And then I was like, "Well, I got to do a little better than that. There has to be something more to it than that." So that made me kind of re-examine, for instance, which is one example, the ride cymbal beat for me, and then that was something getting into, okay, well, what am I actually doing, or what are the people who I like, what are they doing, and why am I not doing that? And so anyway, that really helps. So that's just one example of how teaching for me has really helped me be a much better player. If it wasn't for teaching, I definitely wouldn't have learned as much as I've learned. So
does that force you to kind of move from like an intuitive thing to conscious thought about what you're doing?
Yeah. And I think one thing I would say, I always thought I was a natural in a way. But then, as I've gotten older, I've realized I'm really not. And I think as a teacher, that's actually a good thing to have, is to kind of gone from the space where you don't know how to do the thing and you want to get to the thing. And then once you get to some sort of level of proficiency, you actually can explain the path of how to get there. But if you're just really good and really naturally gifted, then you might miss out on how you got there. You just kind of, you arrived there because you just had the skills. But I feel because I wasn't that natural, I can kind of explain my process, which hopefully helps people kind of through that process as well.
Does that serve you in good stead as a band leader and composer in terms of that ability to communicate things to the rest of the group?
Well, I hope so. At times, I think maybe I'm not necessarily the best at that. But like with anything, I think just the more you do it, the better you get at those things. But one thing that's really helped me with being a band leader is actually listening to some of my favorite movie directors talk about directing a movie. Because I think the parallels of being a movie director versus being a band leader are just so similar, because you're trying to give information but not give too much information that puts people in a box, and being a director, you're just constantly juggling all those different different people, different personalities, how someone's gonna, what's gonna help this person versus another person, and trying to say enough just to make the difference in what you want changed, but try not to over say too much. So the more I've done it, the better I've gotten at that, but it's still a work in progress for sure.
That's a pretty interesting comparison, because when I think of it, you know, like the script and say the sheets, the film has to live off of the script.
Yeah.
And the songs have to live off of the sheets too, right? That there's something there that goes beyond the page.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Just, you know, and you can, well, definitely with music, and I definitely find with this album and my band and these tunes, you know, if it wasn't for the guys being as great as they are, you know, it's just some notes on the page. These guys really brought the stuff to life. So it's, but I've found personally, there's a lot of, I think you find parallels in stuff that you get into. Like, you know, I worked at a coffee shop for a bit, and I could see jazz in making an espresso, and I was into golf in high school, and I can definitely see tons of parallels with golf and jazz, and then movies. The last number of years, I've been really into those, so, and I can see the parallels with jazz. So I think when you get into stuff in a deeper way and get into the, you know, the specifics, but also see the big picture of how the whole thing works, I think you kind of see the parallels between those different areas of focus for you.
Being, you know, a drummer and thinking of, you know, directors, does that, like, is there a parallel? Because the fact that, like, you're, you know, not necessarily right at the front in the center of the stage, that, like, you're kind of behind some of the players?
Could be, yeah. That could be part of it, yeah. It's a different, Yeah, that, totally. Yeah, I out of all those things, I would say the sort of sporting comparison is the most maybe obvious parallel. Just because I say to people, you know, hitting a thing is hitting a thing. So there's a lot of like, you know, transfer stuff that transfers from sport to hitting, you know, playing the drums. And there's a coordination too thing that happens with it as well. But yeah, I wonder. I don't know about the directing thing. There must be. I should think about that. There's probably something there.
I just feel like vantage point might be something because you know where you're placed versus like where the camera would be or where like the players are.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a tricky situation at times leading a band as the drummer. Just like you said, just because where you're situated, you're sort of it's sometimes hard for cues, but that also could lead to like I've been trying to write music that's not necessarily where we need these cues, where everyone has to be looking at me. I want everyone to sort of be the band leader in the sense where, you know, if it's Luisa solo, whoever's solo there, and cues are required, they're sort of doing those cues. So, it's a tricky thing at times being the drummer and being situated behind everyone and trying to lead. So.
Right. Now, keeping it on the topic of film, I had read something, and I guess maybe it was in your one sheet, about the fact that the, you know, it's inspiration for The Island of Form in part came from foreign and art films. And I'm curious if there were particular films that did influence or inspire.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, I did a little short film for it's a short film slash kind of promo video for the album. And it's up on YouTube if anyone wants to go check it out. A bunch of people have checked it out, and I'm really happy how it came out. But that, what happened was I had all these tunes written, and my cousin had given me this collage, which is the album art, as a housewarming gift.
Okay.
And when she gave me this collage, I kind of was I liked the name, I liked and I thought idea of a collage and with an album it's the same thing. You're bringing all these different influences, different experiences, different stuff, and sticking it all together into this and to create this new kind of thing. So this new form. So I really liked the idea of those things. And then I was watching a bunch of different movies. In particular, one movie by a director named Andrei Tarkovsky. I'm not sure if you've ever checked him out, but he's a good one. And he has a movie called Stalker that basically was kind of getting into this area where which I think is interesting and kind of a goal for the album I would hope that when people hear the album it kind of takes them to a different place. And so anyway, this movie Stalker, that's basically what the story is about. There's these characters and they're transported from one place to this other place. And so I did this band photo that was sort of a ripoff of the movie Stalker, where I had the guys in the band dressed up as some of the characters in Stalker. And my sister had this white German Shepherd dog. And in a lot of Tarkovsky movies, there's this German Shepherd dog, but it's typically a black German Shepherd. So I had this white German Shepherd, and I'm like, oh, this would be a cool idea for this band pick. And because this band pick was kind of going along with this story that I had in my head, so... And I thought the album art and the title and all this stuff kind of worked together with the band pick. But then I thought, well, why not do, instead of doing a typical EPK video that kind of comes out where people talk about, you know, why they did what they did and here's the tunes, just do the short film. And then the way the story went, it led us into playing a tune in the studio. So it was us, you know, seeing us play a tune, but then it was also kind of a different thing. And I've just been into film for a number of years now anyway, and kind of always wanted to do a short film. I thought that'd be really fun, or a film or whatever. So I thought this was kind of a natural, kind of cool opportunity for those things. But in the film in particular, I would say I've definitely, like, Andrei Tarkovsky, but definitely Michael Haneke, Stanley Kubrick, David Lynch, Werner Herzog. And if anyone's ever looking to really get into different films from all over the world and just find out about a bunch of great directors from all over the place, I would say you should watch a series called The Story of Film an Irish director named Mark Cousins, and it's basically just a an overview of film from the beginning until present day, but kind of a focus on cinema from all over the place. And on directors who were sort of revolutionary or groundbreaking in a way. So it was just a really nice database for finding out about a bunch of really cool directors. So that's just a couple that I would say that have definitely influenced the short film anyway. Right. And then also in a way my music and stuff like that as well. But definitely the film for sure is influenced by all those directors.
So, speaking of influences, you worked with James Farber as engineer.
Yeah.
On this record. And
yeah.
I'm curious, were there particular albums that he'd done that, you know, made you choose him? Like, I know
yeah.
that, you know, he's worked with Paul Motion, who obviously,
yes.
As a drummer composer, would probably fall in line with you, I would think.
Yes, definitely. Paul Motion is definitely one of my favorite musicians ever. And so I love Paul Motion, but the James Farber thing really started when I was in high school. I was getting into jazz, and I'm from Sydney, Nova Scotia, which is not a small, a tiny little place, but not the biggest place. And there is a number of jazz musicians in Sydney, but once again, not a ton. But luckily for me, when I was in high school, my dad's best friend was a great jazz bass player who lived in Sydney. So once I started getting into jazz, I would go over to his house, and he would give me different records and say, have you ever heard of Philly Joe Jones? And I'd say, no, I don't know who that is. And he would give me a bunch of these Miles Davis records. And have you ever heard of Jeff Kane Watts? And I'd be like, no. And he gave me all this early Wynton Marsalis records. But one of the records that he gave me was Michael Brecker's first record, self-titled, just called Michael Brecker. And it has Jack DeJohnette and Charlie Hayden and Kenny Kirkland and Pat Metheny and Michael Brecker. And it's an amazing album. But I remember putting the vinyl on when I got home. And just hearing Jack's toms and just being like, wow, these sound so good. And I flipped over the record and looked who recorded it. And it said James Farber. And I was like, wow. And actually, it was mastered by Greg Calbee, who mastered my record as well. So then over the next almost 20 years, every time I'd hear something that sounded really good, I would just flip over and find out who was recording it. And more times than not, it was James Farber. So kind of since high school, I've been saying to myself, wow, that'd be really cool to record with James. And then what ended up happening was maybe 10 years ago when I was came here to Toronto, I started playing with Nancy Walker, who's a great piano player here in Toronto, and her husband, Kieran Overs, who's a great bass player who's here. And me and Kieran were chatting one day, and Kieran, we were just talking about how much we love James Farber's recordings and all the stuff. And we were kind of talking, I wonder what it'd be like to record with him. So that was kind of where I started first thinking that would be really something that would be really cool if I ever did my own album at some point, looking into it. And then my friend Ernesto Cervini had used James to mix a few things, so I got James's contact info and just got in touch with him, and he was down to do the record. So, but that was a really, really, really surreal, cool experience actually getting to record with James and mix with James. And then James actually came to the mastering session as well. So very generous, genius artist. I would, that's how I would describe him. And just so pro, and just, it was very, very cool getting a chance to record with him.
Did you, you know,
oh, sorry, that text, I got a text. I'm sorry about that.
Sure. Did you have did you give him direction or an idea of what you wanted to achieve sonically? Or did you say,
no,
these records that you've done are things I'm looking for?
No, because all the records that I really like the sound of, he recorded. And actually, we recorded at Sears Sound in New York City. And actually, in the room that we recorded, the first Fly Trio record, which was recorded there, and I think that sounds awesome. And Dharma Days, a Mark Turner record that I really love, was recorded in that room. And also a great record, Scott Colley, a trio record called The Magic Line that had Bill Stewart and Chris Potter on it, that's a killing record, was recorded in the same room. So a lot of records that I really liked, we actually recorded in the same room with James recording us. So that was a really nice thing. So we didn't have to, I didn't have to say anything, just do your thing. So that was one less thing to focus on during the recording session, which was really ideal.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, before I let you go, Ethan, I want to get you to pick a track off Island of Form that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about it, we'd love to hear that.
Mm. Well, we could. I could probably the best anecdote I have is probably the first track on the album. It's called Awa, and I was very lucky to study for 6 months with this great Cuban drummer who's known as Changuito, but his name's Jose Luis Quintana. And Changuito lived in Toronto here for 6 months in 2010. And Changuito is the drummer in this band Los Bambán, and he's played with he's huge in Cuba and around the world. So to get a chance to study with one of the greatest Cuban drummers ever was a really cool experience. So Changuito used to, I'd go pick him up, and he would come over to my house, and we would play. And he didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Spanish. So he would just come over and sit at the drums and start playing these crazy beats. And I'd have to sit and try and figure out what the heck was, well, first figure out where one was, and then try and figure out what the heck was going on. So it was a really good ear training exercise for me, and it was just incredible. Every day he had some other amazing beat to show me. But anyway, if he really liked the way the groove was starting to sound, then he would go awa. So that was kind of the reason I wrote the tune, was just sort of a little tribute to Changuito in those 6 months where I just learned so much. And the tune, like the groove and harmony and all this stuff is sort of based on Changuito in a way, but the groove was one of the cooler beats that he showed me, and kind of I took that and sort of put that in the piano and the bass part a little more than the drums, and I tried to change the drum part a little bit, so it's kind of one of Changuito's beats but put into music. So.
Awesome. Well, we'll give that one a listen. Next Tuesday, November 6th, 4 p.m. Yeah. here at the University of Manitoba, and then 7:30 at 4th.
Yeah.
Ethan, thanks very much for taking some time.
Hey, Michael, thanks so much for making time, and nice chatting with you, and hope to do it again sometime soon.
sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. And I know I'd leave your thing alone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't home. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time when she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. I know. I'd leave your thing alone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away, no. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
Give my love a chance, let me guide the way. that smile out of your disinterested gaze. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. Listen to the music by the fire. Tell me I'm the one that you desire. Even though it might be only for tonight, that's just how it goes, there's nothing wrong. The music sometimes only lasts till dawn. Let me show you that I'm right. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. Give my love a chance, let me guide the way. I'll gently coax that smile out of your disinterested gaze. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. 'Cause you know what they say, we all die alone. To look at it that way can chill you to the bone. But you know there's something they don't tell you as they send you on your way. We're all alive together, come with me. And I know there's not much comfort when the world can be so cruel. Take my hand, take my heart, tonight I'm here for you. 'Cause it's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. Give my love a chance, let me guide the way. I'll gently coax that smile out of your disinterested gaze. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. Give my love a chance, let me guide the way. I'll gently coax that smile out of your disinterested gaze. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. It's the kind of night for a moonlight serenade. I know you're weary of men of my type, and I know, baby, they just didn't treat you right. But that ain't me, no, I'm mixing the old with the new, and I'll prove it to you, baby. Here's what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you, just like Sam Cooke would do. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you, just like Sam Cooke would do. Oh, sometimes you need to hold someone close, and sometimes you've gotta ask her to dance. And I don't want a thing to go wrong, 'cause sometimes you only get one chance. chance. But I'm not gonna blow it, no, I'm gonna do things right. And when it comes to time and we're all alone tonight, I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke would do. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke would do. Oh, some people, they think it's just a game. And some people, they try to keep score. And I know that I won't do the same. Cause some people are just worth more. And I know you won't be caught, so let the others do their thing. You deserve a song complete with horns and strings. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke would do. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke would do. Who says that the past and the present can't mix? And who says that a new dog can't learn old tricks? I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke. Just like Sam Cooke would do. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. I'm gonna sweet talk you. Just like Sam Cooke would do.
All right. Well, we are joined in studio by Alexis Campagne.
Hey.
Thanks for playing some live tracks for us.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was super fun.
So you're in town in part because you're going to play with Heather Bishop or open for Heather Bishop, I guess.
Yeah.
More technically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm playing with her as well.
Okay.
So.
But kind of making your way across Canada as well, like kind of is this or is this like a one-off for you?
Well, this particular show is a one-off, but we've been doing summers. Pretty regular. It's two summers now that we've been going through Western Canada.
Right, because you'd come through in the past. With
yeah,
her, right?
And we've come through in the past, and we came here also this last April to play shows and with various artists and stuff. So
right now, you grew up in the folk music community.
Yes,
but you did a track singing about Sam Cooke, and
yes.
You did a Bill Withers cover.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about the place of soul music in your life.
Well, yeah, I mean, soul music, it's just it hits you. It hits you. There's definitely a special place there for me. What happened was I grew up in folk music, and then I went and studied jazz in Paris.
Okay.
And my real introduction to that was like they had. Really hands-on classes, and they had a lot of like Motown like things where they would learn how to, like, you know, get the groove going with the band and all that. And when I was there, they had the session with all the musicians, and they were like, okay, so who likes to sing? You know, who likes to sing? And I'm putting my hand up, and I look around, and nobody else put their hand up. Mm. There's a cultural difference or something that, like, musicians over there, like, they learn the instruments and they do that, but not a lot of them sing as well. You know, not even for fun or anything.
Right.
And so I ended up singing all these tunes for, like, this class. So, you know, I started looking up all these singers, you know, Otis Redding and Sam Cooke and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I felt it. So I really wanted to write a song kind of, you know, in homage to that.
Mm-hmm. What instrument were you over there studying?
Jazz violin.
Okay.
Actually, yeah. I was studying jazz violin, and it was a big change for me, because I hadn't really done jazz before. And I ended up doing a lot more singing when I was there, because it takes quite a while to get the jazz violin style going to the same level, you know, to be able to play along comfortably with the other musicians. So I ended up singing a lot more, and then and doing certain things, like, you know, accompanying myself on the violin while I sing. I tried to do that a lot more. So
I mean, obviously, growing up in the folk, it's a fiddle tradition, right? I mean, it basically, we're talking about, like, the same instrument. It's just like how you approach it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so, like, what things did you have to learn, techniques or approaches? Like, how does it differ in terms of the jazz? Like, is it mm-hmm. like a more melodic and less percussive thing, or, like, what's the kind of crux of the difference?
Yeah, I mean, starting out doing jazz, the big difference is that it's the improvisation, mm-hmm. right? So improvising, and the harmonies are a lot different, and the rhythms are different as well, right? So there's a very much an axe on you know, getting the right rhythm, the swing, or the groove, which has a good link with folk music too. I mean, it's, you know, folk music, fiddling is really dance music. You have to know to dance, right? And so, like, I studied some classical. I had a classical bass training, but because I played folk music, like, you know, I was still knew how to do some dance music, knew how to groove and do all of that. And so it was a little bit easier for me, I think, than maybe someone who really did classical violin who would go to jazz. The harmony and the rhythm would be pretty difficult to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for me mainly it was just starting getting to hear those harmonies and hear the different types of changes, because in folk music you learn to improvise, but the harmonies are simple, you know, they're there to really hit home and to appeal to to everyone, and it's these very tonal, very great sounding stuff. But then when you get into jazz, you start getting more you know, more complex harmonies, things that you don't necessarily hear naturally, or that you have to, like, you know, kind of train yourself to hear and to be able to navigate through those harmonies. So
yeah, kind of, I mean, just even thinking of it, seeing my image, like the like the little dial of a pan, the like left to right thing, where it's like rigidity of, like, classical, and then it tapers down to, like, fluidity of jazz, but at mm-hmm. the same time, like, simplistic harmony towards, like, a complex harmonic thing in jazz, right? Like, that, yeah. Like the two kind of cross over in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of crossover, and I really feel like as many different styles as you learn, it always helps you no matter what you do. And I feel like a lot of people, a lot of musicians, they obviously love playing what they know and what they like and what they're good at. But if you can kind of go in outside your comfort zone and learn different styles, it really, really helps.
Was that a conscious decision when you decided to go to jazz school in France, that, like, going outside of your comfort zone was part of that?
It was part. In part was, like, I did a CGEP in Quebec, which is, like, post...
it's like the first year
it's,
post
it's
or
like,
something?
Like grade 12 and then first year university type
right.
thing. So it's like a college, it's a middle ground between high school and university. And so I did classical violin there. And I really, you know, I applied to a few places, but I didn't really have that many options. And I kind of applied as a, you know, I didn't really expect to go to France. Like you hear about this school and you apply and you don't really, you know, it kind of doesn't feel
long
real.
Shot.
Kind of a long shot. But when I got accepted, I got super excited. And, you know, like I obviously liked jazz. I liked listening to it. But mainly my experience with jazz was like, you know, the like Ella Fitzgerald and like singers or like Frank Sinatra or like the really kind of old school like songs, you mm-hmm. know? And so I was like, oh yeah, I like those songs. I like jazz. I like singing jazz. And then you get into this environment that is completely different. I mean, it's just way not that at all.
Well, yeah, because I would guess, you know, there's kind of songbooks, right? Like the Cole
yeah.
Porter songbook and
yes.
stuff like that. And I feel like that falls into that folk tradition
yes,
of like,
exactly.
you know,
yeah.
folkways songbook, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I could see that you would maybe gravitate towards
yeah.
that or feel that that's kind of like akin.
Yeah.
Whereas
sure.
a lot of the like contemporary jazz is like
yeah.
the like really like shattering of that songbook in some
yes.
ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they took that. It used to be the pop music of the time, you know, it was the songs that were playing all the time. And then obviously they went way further many times.
Mm-hmm.
they took that and way further than that. And so, yeah. And then I was in this environment. And I know like about myself, I know that if I'm surrounded by people that are way better than me, then I don't, you know, I really try hard to get there. Like I don't really get too discouraged.
Right.
And so like, I really wanted to be surrounded by, you know, great players and the students there were amazing. So it was really the best place for me to be.
So what was your sort of biggest takeaway from that study period? Like, was it the sort of discovery of your voice and becoming a singer in that sense, or
I've always been singing, it was definitely the improvisation and kind of being like knowing that, oh, you know, what I'm doing is good, you know, like, and following my ear is really kind of the most important part, because you when you're studying things, and especially like violin, that some of the studies and you know, the institutions can be really rigid in that sense, and they tell you, oh, this is what you have to do, this is what you have to sound like. And it's great for classical music because there is a norm and there is a way that you kind of have to sound like,
mm-hmm.
At least until you get to a certain point, and then you have to become your own player or whatever, right? But just to get there and kind of adapt to the point where I could play jazz and I could kind of keep up with all those other players. It made me feel pretty good that, okay, what I'm doing is right. And, you know, every time I felt like those, like the, you know, the classical school was telling me to do this thing and it, you know, I didn't really fit in there in that mold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's okay. And that's actually a good thing.
Right.
I have to be, you know, unique. I have to be a bit different. So,
right. So in terms of your songwriting, what's your process like? Are you like a melodic writer? Like, do you have a song line first, or is it, you know, does it come from a lyric or a story that you're looking to tell?
Yeah. I'm a pretty slow writer. I'm too picky is really what it comes down to.
But
I am definitely more on the melodic side. Like the lyrics are my real crux.
That's where the slow.
And that's where the slow comes down. But usually I come up with some kind of a melody or something, and then I try to get a chorus down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the verses take a really long time. But sometimes the chorus just comes, you know, the like Sweet Talk, I just kind of started playing and the chorus came pretty naturally. The words came pretty quickly. But then, yeah, it's trying to tell a story and trying to add to that. But generally I start with a melody. And
is that just 'cause you hear those kinds of things in your head and then?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know like, That's the kind of thing that I can really polish and I feel is my strength.
Right.
So it comes and I noodle and I play around with it and I kind of, you know, change it around or try to make it a better melody or better harmony. And then kind of when I get a bit of a structure of the melody, then I can work at getting some words out.
So if you can identify that as your strength, how do you tackle your weaknesses? Like what does work look like for you in terms of, you know, mitigating?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I try to work with other people and stuff. My brother is also a singer songwriter, and he's kind of he's really good with lyrics. And so we end up writing together a lot of times. He helped me do, like, we co-wrote Sweet Talk. He helped me do some of the bridge and some of the sections. I do songwriting sessions with my mom, Connie Calder, who's a songwriter as well. And I try to just, I kind of force myself to write down lyrics or words, you know, like I have a note app on my phone, and I, you know, at night, sometimes I just try to write stuff down, or whenever I hear something interesting, I make a note of it. And I have to like actually sit down and spend time and be like, I'm going to spend this 30 or minutes or an hour now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to go through and try to, you know, get some verses down or some lyrics or try to get some stuff down. So,
right. So coming up, what's, I mean, beyond the shows with Heather and stuff, what's on mm-hmm. your kind of horizon?
Well, I'm playing some, I live in Montreal. I'm still playing some shows in Montreal. I am moving to New York, pretty soon. So that's exciting, but, I'm going to keep doing some, like my music in Montreal, and maybe create some like online content or stuff like that. I have a Home Roots tour in February, like a house concert tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of trying to build that. I'm gonna make I'm working on a music video for one of my songs. I made I released an album last April. So I'm kind of going off of that and doing some shows.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm mostly playing Montreal. And then I plan on coming back in Winnipeg next summer.
The ideally. Move to to New York, rather, is that for music purposes or?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. So my wife is moving there for some studies.
Okay.
So I'm moving there with her, but I also know it's close enough to Montreal that I can come up and keep doing my music there. Yeah. So, but it'll be more to create, I think, to write songs and get right. some more stuff while I'm living there. So
sure enough. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that album, can I get you to pick a track off of the most recent record that we can play for folks? You know, give them the taste of the studio version.
Yeah,
than
for sure. Yeah, I think Wheels Like a Chevrolet could be a good one. Modest is a good one too. It's a funny song.
We'll go with your first instinct, right? Yeah. It's like in a multiple choice test. You always go with like sure. your first answer. Why Wheels Like a Chevrolet? Mm-hmm. Why'd that come to you first?
I think it's a pretty unique track. It's actually something that I do a lot live, but I didn't bring my loop station or equipment and stuff. But it's an arrangement of a Connie Calder song that I did, where I do it violin and voice solo,
mm-hmm.
but I just keep adding on to it. And so what's on the album is what I also do live.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to try and get something done. Like when I hear, you know, looping violin and stuff like that, there's a lot of dead space and there's a lot of taking time to lay down the track. But I really wanted to do something that's like in real time. And so the song just keeps going and I just keep adding on violin while I sing the song. And I mean, I love the song. It's a great song. I wish I could write a song like that, but, until then I'll just keep covering them.
Right on. Well, Alexi, thanks very much for coming in and playing and sitting down.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
If I had a wheels like a Chevrolet, I would roll on down that big highway, and I wouldn't stop till I was by your side. If I had wheels, I would ride, ride, ride. What would your mama say if she could see the way we kiss behind the backyard tree. She'd say those boys, they'll love from dusk till dawn. But when the sun comes up, they're up and gone. If wishes were money, I'd buy everything. If hopes were golden, I would wear your ring. If you hadn't gone to where the jobs were good, if you'd written like you said you would. So if I had a wheel like a Chevrolet, oh, I would roll on down that big highway, and I wouldn't stop till I was by your side. I had wings, I would ride, ride, ride. It's a raging fire. You cannot wait to feel your lover's touch. But when love is gone, it's a funeral pyre. You miss them so. If I had wheels like a Chevrolet, or I would roll on down that big highway, and I wouldn't stop until I was by your side. If I had wheels, I would ride, ride, ride. If I had wheels, I would ride, ride, ride.